Welcome to Taito's new series of events, which we're calling New Horizons. And we're doing in association with our podcast, Without Borders, which you can find on all of the usual sort of podcast platforms. I'm Brendan Craigie. I'm the founder and managing partner of Taito. And the kind of the inspiration of this for this series of events was just that obviously it's a challenging time for all of us. You know, we're worried about our loved ones, our businesses, our colleagues. And I think, you know, when you're remote and when you're isolated, some of those kind of feelings can be amplified. And so we thought, you know, even though we're remote and even though we are isolated, it kind of feels like there's never been a more important time to bring people together, to share experiences, share ideas. So that's kind of the background to the New Horizons series, which we're going to be doing weekly from now on. I'm joined by my colleague, Flick Hazelhurst. So hi, Flick.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Great to have so many people live with us already this afternoon. But just a reminder that all of these events can be accessed via our Without Borders podcast at a later date. If people want to listen back or share with friends or colleagues. But Without Borders can be accessed on our podcast page at taitopr.com, but also on all of your normal podcast platforms.
Yeah. And then obviously a very special welcome to our guest, Dee Kafari, MBE, who is joining us. And Dee, for those of you who don't know, you know, is kind of like one of the UK's most prolific sportswomen and obviously yachtswoman. And she has sailed around the world, I believe it's 6 times now, Dee, but you are the first woman to sail around the world solo in both directions.
That's right. Hello, everybody. As he says, I'm still the only crazy woman to have sailed single-handed non-stop around the world in both directions. So if anybody else wants to stand up and follow in my footsteps, please feel free after this.
That wasn't because kind of you realized that you'd forgotten something, you had to go back and get it, or I was, you know, caught Dee on the radio the other week, and it just really struck me the parallels between someone who is, you know, it's a bit ridiculous to say there are parallels, because kind of even in lockdown here we can go outside and et cetera, but there are probably some valuable lessons that we can draw from the experience you've had, Dee, of being at sea for like over 170 days, you know, by yourself. And so it seemed like a really great way to kick off this series was to talk to you and get your perspective on some questions that we've got.
No, it's a pleasure to be here. And you're right, there are so many lessons that I spent a long time learning that now we're in this environment that most people aren't used to, that I realise I've kind of done those lessons already. So it's really nice to share that experience and that knowledge now to hopefully make it a little bit easier for people and to inspire people that this is not the end of the world and we will come out the other side.
Yeah, excellent.
Well, we've got lots of questions for you to cover in the next hour or so, but for everybody that's listening in, you can see at the bottom of your screen that there is a Q&A button. If you press that, you're able to ask any of your own questions as they come to mind as we go through the session. And at the end of the session, Brendan and I will take a look at those and try to answer at least a couple of them if time allows. So please do submit those if there's anything you'd like to ask.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I guess maybe slightly counterintuitively, just to start with, Dee, I was thinking that for you, that, you know, how is it feeling? Because you've kind of like, not only are you under this kind of situation where you're stuck at home, but you're not allowed to go out on the sea. So kind of how are you coping with being landlocked?
It's a strange one for me. And I like being out there. I genuinely love what I do. And I love being out on the water. So I do miss it. But I'm completely aware of the circumstances that have changed for everybody now. And so it's a case of having to change my focus and just think differently about my day-to-day routine. And actually looking at stuff that I probably wouldn't spend so much time focusing on. So looking at my fitness, and there's always that never-ending jobs list that you put off, all those things that you just don't want to do. Now I've kind of got no excuse not to do them. So I'm working my way slowly through that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that I think what, you know, what really the point there that I'm taking away from that is that actually times like this do also present opportunities to do things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do, or you wouldn't have the time to focus on. And so I'm just thinking that when you sort of first touched down after you'd been doing one of your solo journeys around the world, I understand it's like 178 days. What does it feel like when you first put your foot on land after all that time?
It was a really strange one. I mean, that's nearly 6 months at sea on your own. And then suddenly I arrived back to a crowd of people, all my family, and I hadn't seen them. You know, I'd seen nobody face to face. I was very lucky the Princess Anne was there to meet me in as well. And it was just a whirlwind. I don't think I really noticed it. And everybody expected me to step on dry land and have a little bit of a land wobble going on. But I was just caught up in the moment, did all my media stuff, big party in the evening. And it wasn't until 24 hours later that it hit me that I was on dry land. And I appreciated the little things that I hadn't kind of interacted with for 6 months, like hot running water or fluffy towels, moisturizer, fresh food. You know, it was kind of a sensory overload, I think.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. No, I can imagine that you... you know, that you've just got the opportunity to, and did it to kind of take a period of adjustment?
For sure. That first trip around the world, 6 months, I didn't drive for a while, and I couldn't really cope in the supermarket because there was almost too much choice. Mm. And it took a little while to kind of come back to that. Now I'm a bit more practiced at going around the world and my transition's much quicker.
Yeah. Excellent.
So coming back home, I guess you felt overwhelmed almost by having so many people around you. But how about when you were sailing, when you were away at sea itself? How did you cope with the kind of physical isolation?
I think it's really strange to spend 24 hours a day with just yourself. And also when you're sailing, you don't have a daytime and a nighttime. It's 24/7. And living with yourself for that long is quite intense. And I found that quite hard to deal with because there wasn't any distraction or anything like that. And now we're in a situation where we're physically isolated from people, but we have this time on our hands where we can reach out and connect with people. And I think that's really important because one of the things I really missed was that face-to-face communication that you get. And I think that's what will affect people now when they're in their houses. Mm-hmm. They're used to interacting with people and they're not getting that. So I think it's really a chance to embrace technology so we do as much of this as we can so we still get those facial expressions and see people's eyes so they communicate so much more than just words do.
And even outside of the physical isolation, what about the element of being in kind of a very confined space without being able to kind of go out and exercise and do the things that you'd normally do? I think you're a former PE teacher, is that right?
Yeah,
so I imagine exercise is a huge part of your life and really important to you. So how do you cope with kind of spending such long periods of time in such a small space, which I guess we're all kind of doing in our homes now?
We are, but you expand to fill the space you have. So a boat is relatively small and compact, and you're generally quite busy in your day-to-day routine, whether you're driving the boat, trimming the sails, changing the sails, making it go fast, or looking at weather and using more strategy and tactical kind of decision-making processes, or you're eating, drinking, sleeping, or fixing something. So you realize then that, you know, you never walk further than 60 feet or the length of your boat, and suddenly it affects you in different ways. So my hamstrings got very tight, my leg muscles kind of withered away, but your upper body in contrast is working very hard with the physical requirements of sailing a boat. So the adjustments coming back to land for that were really interesting. I couldn't walk very far, but I could arm wrestle anybody.
Excellent.
And you mentioned technology as well. What do you, at this particular time of our lives when we are very isolated, you mentioned having kind of face-to-face calls to make sure you can still take physical cues from people and have that human contact. What else do you think is really important about technology at this time? And equally, is there anything tech-related at this time that you would try to avoid or you don't like so much?
Well, it's that kind of love it and hate it side, isn't it? I mean, video calls on so many platforms that are available are awesome. And I think businesses are really using that, but also families, so grandparents, if they can get their heads around the technology, are not missing out on crucial kind of milestones or steps that children are taking or grandchildren are taking. And I think that's really cool. But equally, the pressure it puts people under. So they're at home yet they're still having to do their hair or kind of think about what they're wearing. And how many of us have done that, looking over somebody's shoulder to see what's in the background of the house or the office where someone is? What's their house look like? You know, it can add a real pressure. So love it and hate it, but the video platformings that we have are quite a funny distraction. You know, the dog that suddenly appears, or the child that appears, or you know, the inappropriate bookshelf that's behind somebody unknowingly in a video is quite funny.
I think that's, I think that clearly there are a lot of things in the current world that, you know, are troubling, and there are lots of things that we can't do as normal. But we are very lucky and very privileged today that there is so much that we can do thanks to technology. You know, we're living in an age where so much is possible that, you know, 10 or so years ago, we wouldn't have had the internet infrastructure and the you know, the technology to be able to communicate the way we do. So, you know, thank goodness for that.
Definitely. And I think this is, you know, a critical time for everybody getting much better at using it and using it to their advantage. And I think, you know, our future tomorrow will be a new normal, and it will be different to what we knew as the old normal. And who knows where this will be. I think people will think differently about the amount of travel they did and how things can be done differently going forward. And I think that's a positive in the environmental kind of side of things that we kind of forget over the pressure of the virus.
Yeah,
it's almost kind of pressing the reset button, isn't it, and thinking again.
Yeah, Mother Nature's definitely having a word with us, aren't they, right now.
So one of the things that interests me at the moment is, and I think you'll probably have an opinion on it, is that I'm a bit of a planner. I like to kind of like plan what's going to happen. And fortunately, in my line of work, usually, you know, there are the odd challenges that come up that you have to deal with because, you know, being in communications, but mainly you have a clear idea of what's going to happen. I guess at the moment, there is quite a lot of uncertainty in the world. And I'm guessing that when you set off on one of your around the world trips, you need to prepare for uncertainty. You know, like that actually quite a lot of crazy stuff can happen in 178 days when you're, you know, sailing around the world. How do you plan for uncertainty and adapt for uncertainty so you don't go crazy?
Yeah, no, and I would say acceptance is key for that. You know, you have to approach it with an open mind that whatever your intended route is, there's going to be curveballs thrown along the way, and you're going to need a certain level of open-mindedness to adapt to this and embrace it. And I think the big take home for me is a change is very quick, but a behavior takes time, and it takes a little bit of a transition of a shift in behavior and culture so that you start to do things differently. And I think while we're under this pressure, everyone's being quite open-minded and kind of open to this change and this behavior change that's going on slowly behind the scenes. But you're right, you know, I'm at the mercy of Mother Nature. No 2 days are ever the same, which is why we keep going back out there, because it's a challenge. And you learn each day as something gets thrown at you, you come out the other side and you think, oh, okay, well, I could have done that better if I'd done this or this. So it's that striving for constant improvement, but under that pressure of you're not quite sure what the challenge is going to be. And I think, you know, we all kind of, if we can take the pressure, we all thrive in that environment to become a better version of ourselves. So I think the secret is to take this as a positive and understand that it's going to take time for a transition of behavior and culture shift to manage it.
And I'm guessing that when you set off, you have an idea of what could go wrong, and you kind of plan for those eventualities. Is that fair to say that you don't, how often are you surprised when you set off?
No, I mean, you plan for the what if scenarios, what are going to be the showstoppers, and you have in your arsenal the skills that you're going to need should X happen, Y happen, or Z happen.
Yeah.
But what invariably tends to happen is a variation of those things happen. So it's not quite as you planned for or practiced, but with a little bit of resourcefulness and a little bit of advice and guidance coming in on an email or a phone call, and you'll be surprised what you can get round and manage and keep your boat in the race and keep you out there on the water safely.
Yeah.
And ultimately what we're doing at the moment is just kind of treading water and keeping ourselves going so that we can stay out there.
So it sounds like it, as we look to the future and not it being entirely clear about what that future looks like completely, that we could maybe do some of that scenario planning and thinking, you know, what are the what if situation, scenarios for us?
Yeah, and there's going to be some real obvious ones. And then there's going to be those ones that are going to come as a bit of a surprise, but are kind of based loosely along similar lines to what you'd planned for.
Yeah.
And there are ultimately, for, you know, a racing boat sailing around the world, there are going to be some showstoppers. So
yeah.
If the boat sinks, if the mast comes down, if I'm completely injured beyond repair, you know, they're your three kind of, it's a game over scenario. But there's lots of other things that you can get yourself around somehow and keep muddling on and going forwards.
Yeah. So changing tack, using the...
Very nice nautical analogy.
Do you like that? when you're at sea for such a long time, do you kind of like thinking about like the self-isolation at the moment, and there's probably the opportunity for us all to do things, you know, sort of self-improvement type of things. And I'd be interested to know what you're doing. But then I also just wondered, when you're sailing, do you kind of like set yourself like little projects that you sort of deal with while you're at sea, or do you just not have time to do that?
I'm quite naturally a goal-focused person. I need to have that sense of achievement, and I need it on a regular basis. I love feedback, and when I'm sailing on my own, there's only me to give me my feedback, so it's hard.
Yes.
And so I'm quite a structured person and set my tasks so I can tick off my jobs list.
Yes.
So for me, sailing around the world, it's, you know, very structured in my day. It's based around two big weather forecasts that I then plan around, and there's generally something to do all the time. And I'd say now it's about kind of managing the expectations a little bit. You know, we could all be superheroes, and by the end of a 3-week lockdown period, we could have decorated our whole house. But the reality is that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to recreate our garden into Kew Gardens. You know, it's just not going to happen. So I think, yes, have the jobs list there to do, and set yourself kind of realistic, achievable goals, and keep moving forward, ticking them off, but don't kind of set yourself something that you're never going to manage.
No. And you raised an interesting point there, which I think is very relevant to the current environment, which is that, you know, a lot of us, I guess, like feedback, you know, and, you know, acknowledgement of what we are doing. And when you're at sea, I'm guessing, you know, there's less of that. How do you manage that situation?
So I run kind of my own personal reward scheme.
Okay.
And when things are good, it's as far as the next great cape or the next big ocean. Mm. And you have your favorite food, or you might have, you know, your bag of sweets that, you know, is like a special treat. And it's like, right, that's what we're aiming for. And then I have quite flexible goalposts because of naturally a changing environment. So when things get pretty tough, those goalposts come a lot closer. So it suddenly becomes the next weather forecast or the next sail change, or maybe even surviving the next couple of hours in this storm I'm in, and I'll get a cup of tea, or I'll have my bag of sweets early. And it's, you know, just that kind of setting yourself milestones, feeling like you're achieving them, and then feeling better from that. And I thought about that. I went for a run this morning on my daily outing, and it's a bit like, you know, life's pretty hard. I don't find running very easy, but it's the next lamppost, or it's the next roundabout, or it's the end of the park, or it's, oh, I'm on the road home now. And, you know, it's that kind of milestones that you still feel that sense of achievement.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good.
The other thing that you mentioned there that I think is really relevant is structure. And I think having a routine and structure to our day at the moment is something that's quite difficult in times when everything looks very different and we're not, you know, commuting to work every day, spending X amount of time there and then commuting home. But I think that routine is really important. Did you find it really important to keep a routine while you were sailing?
Definitely. For me, that was key. And especially if you imagine I'm not only sailing, but I'm traveling through time zones as I go. So it's really easy to lose sense of what day it is or what meal I should be eating. So structure was key for me, and it's based around the two weather forecasts that come in 12 hours apart. So that is quite critical to make sure that I could then maintain my nutrition and my hydration and my routine that keeps me well, as well as the critical decision making for everybody else. And if you think now, you know, you take on these roles that you don't normally do on a boat. You have to be everything, your own medic, your own engineer, your own mechanic, the weather expert, nutritionist, you know, you're everything. And I think people now in their households are still trying to work, still trying to run a household, and still trying to become a teacher for the homeschooling. They've got all these different roles, and without structuring your day, these are all going to merge, and you'll be not very good at any of them rather than kind of okay at all of them. So I think it's really critical now. And I think, you know, don't beat yourselves up if it doesn't, if you're not excellent at everything. We're losing critical time apart, or that commute to and from work where you can decompress and process the day before you interact with someone else.
Yes.
And we're missing that now. And yes. I think, imagine all those people that have never worked from home before. This is a hard transition to do. And that work life, family life is merging. And it, you know, you don't want this to be the reason that, you know, for a failed relationship. You want this to kind of blossom of time of people together. So it does take a little bit of managing, and routine will really help, and also not giving yourself such a hard time.
I think that's a really good point about the, like, it. I think we kind of, people that work full time, or, you know, they, you do get like a buzz from just the process of like leaving the door in the morning, go traveling to work, starting work, and you have all of this extra time to fill. And there is a temptation to, I'm going to start work earlier, I'm going to finish work later. But that, as you say, it's not going to be good for your relationships.
No, you still have to kind of manage that end of day time and transition out of the office into household again, rather than letting them merge. And it's interesting, I have to do that when I'm sailing. I am in complete control of absolutely everything. And my life is in my hands with everything, every action I do and every decision I make.
Yeah.
And I arrive home, and actually I then have to realize that not only do I have to pause to allow two-way conversation with people, but I don't have to own and be responsible for everything. And as a result, initially, I can't make a decision to save my life. You know, I'm like, whoa, not my responsibility anymore. Someone else do it.
Yeah.
And it's a hard transition. You know, I feel for my boyfriend who's suffered through six around the world now of having to live through that transition all the time. Yeah, yeah.
Going back to a point actually we touched on earlier, was, are you someone who kind of gives yourself times to reflect and pause? And I guess really what I'm thinking is that sometimes we're in positions where we can't move forward with everything that we want to. And that can be like a healthy opportunity to kind of like take stock and appraise the situation, or, you know, rather than keep rushing forward. Is that something you do, or?
It is now. And it's something I wasn't very good at, but I have got better at it because I completely understand how valuable me time is. Mm-hmm. And I think in today's world, you know, with platforms that we have, it's instant access and instant responses to everything. And now, you know, I'll take the dog for a walk and I won't have anything with me, and it's me time. And it just gives me time and space, which is what I'm used to having when I'm sailing, just to process things, process my life, where I'm at, order my priorities and my jobs list. And you just come back feeling a bit more refreshed and ready to go again. And I think in our everyday world, we don't often give ourselves a chance for that. And, you know, I fought back against that, thinking it was a bit airy-fairy. But actually, the value of me time is really important for everyone, I think.
I think that's very good. And very difficult, I imagine, for a lot of people to get at the moment if they're at home, you know, with families and young children that, you know, might otherwise have been at school, and now they're kind of around you all the time. It's harder to get that, but so important.
Yeah, and that balance is going to be key. And, you know, I don't have the answers of how best to do that, because as you say, the children are there wanting attention and each other are there, plus you're managing and juggling all these lives that are all merged into one now. So it is a hard balance, but it's quite critical, I think.
Great. Back to you, Flick. Sorry.
Yeah, no, sorry. I was just going to say, I guess related to that, we do live in a world where we're totally overwhelmed with options normally. And you were saying then around it being a luxury of being able to go for a dog walk and not have 1,000 other things to think about and 1,000 other things to do. I think that this situation also brings really into sharp focus what we need in the world versus what we might just want. Do you think that it gives us a stronger opinion in terms of what's valuable to us?
For sure. I mean, on a boat, we have a finite resource. So we only have what we take with us. And we're very aware of that. and you live within your means and you manage that, and so you can get to the end of the race still having something to eat and drink. And when you come back, this sensory overload takes over and you realize how wasteful we are as a society and how indulgent we are. And you almost become quite minimalist and grateful for the little things in life, be it TV or a carpet or a running water, a fluffy towel. You know, it really makes you appreciate simple things in life. And I think it does help to kind of press the reset and reevaluate a little bit. And I think now at this time, we're in that kind of mode where we're starting to think that way. We don't have a disposable income that we used to. A lot of people are struggling with work and income. We're shopping for basic essentials, of which some people are stockpiling, and so you're not getting what you used to get. And it's just managing in that kind of minimalist or a much smaller environment that we're used to. And I think it does allow people to kind of reevaluate and reset their priorities in life and what's really essential and what's really needed against what's would be nice and what they would like.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And then I guess the other thing that I found really interesting was thinking about the issue of control in this situation. And I guess when you're sailing, I imagine that you have to deal with 100 things every day that happen that are completely out of your control. And I think at the moment, we're all in a situation where we feel really out of control. So how do you think that your experiences of dealing with that can apply to the situation that we're in now, where none of us quite know what's going to happen?
It is interesting, and most people would say that I am a bit of a control freak, and it's because I do like to know, and I'm a planner and I'm very methodical, and it's quite hard when suddenly there's this external influence that you can't imagine. You know, we don't actually know what tomorrow is going to be like, let alone next week, next month, 6 months. We have no idea where this is going, and that sense of foreboding is fear, you know, generates fear and anxiety in people, which is why well-being and mindfulness is so critical for people just to get through this time. And I, you know, I kind of know what I'm doing in a routine, but obviously things come up unexpected and you deal with it. And for me, it was about learning the psychology of control the controllables and just deal with the other things one at a time. If you spend all your energies worrying about the things you can't control, you're going to be exhausted and have achieved nothing. It's hard to do because it's very natural to fear for everything else. And I think there's a balance. You need to control what external sources you're getting. You know, you don't have the news on 24/7 while you're at home. It's going to drive you mad. You know, have your daily update, and so you know what's going on and you're appraised of the situation. But then, you know, have some music and some fun and get that balance and get that distraction and take the positives that you can. You know, this is a great time to realize, well, now I'm eating meals with my family, and I never did that because I used to have to be at work.
Yeah.
Or I'm seeing the children, you know, kind of develop this skill, or we've played in the garden, or, you know, I taught them something, you know, homeschooling that they didn't know. And, you know, I think it's be positive about the little things in life, and that way you still remain kind of in a certain level of control because you're kind of planning your day that you can do something about.
Yeah, and I guess it comes back a little bit to that idea of scenario planning, whereby, you know, there are some scenarios that you can plan for, but I think it's also about having that acceptance that there's no possible way that you can plan for every single scenario. So it's kind of being able to let that go.
Yeah, definitely. And I think while we know what the weather's going to be like in the next week, you know, something will happen with the boat that will surprise you. And you know what your kids are interested in, but dealing with them 24 hours a day is different because normally you give them to a teacher. You know, you're not a trained teacher, so don't beat yourself up that you can't deal with it the whole time. You know, and the children are finding it hard to understand why suddenly they're not hanging out with their friends or not being away from the parents as well. So I think it's that balance a little bit. And it is about structure, but it's about kind of thinking of the positives and the little things that this is an opportunity of family time that you would never normally get. So, you know, don't kind of write it off and stress it out, but embrace it.
So we're going to go to some of the questions that we've got from our audience today. And, you know, if you have any others, guys, feel free to drop them in there. So I'm going to start with Mark. He said, Dee, it's been a while since I read your autobiography, but the one thing that really struck me was your emotional roller coaster. Would it be fair to say that you were sometimes further past your emotional comfort zone? And what coping mechanisms did you use to get yourself back to a less emotional space?
Oh, well, thank you for that question, Mark. And you are dead right. That first round the world was the biggest emotional roller coaster ever. But what I did learn from that was I spent a bit of time with sports psychologists, and I pushed back on that a little bit because I was very British and didn't want to speak to anyone about anything and thought a cup of tea would solve everything. But once I went through the process, that was the biggest value for me, stepping up from being an adventurer to professional racer, really. And that was the transition that I made. And that was learning to manage myself and also kind of know how to deal with things. I underestimated how much effect nutrition and sleep and hydration played on my emotions. And I underestimated how my default setting was quite negative. I would happily say to people, I don't want this to happen. I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to come last. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. But I wouldn't say what I did want to do. So I had to consciously change my language to be positive language. And it's something I still practice now, because under stress, you do revert back. But now it's a case of, you know, kind of focusing on the things you can action and you can positively influence. And make sure those people around you use that language as well. So rather than saying, oh, Brendan's boat's going faster than yours, well, I can't control Brendan's boat. So I needed to have, are you happy with your boat speed? Are you making the numbers? You know, is it time for a sail change? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, that'd be good. So it was, you know, a few little keys that kind of unlocked a much better and more efficient management of myself that kind of changed this emotional roller coaster into a much more even keel, where all my energies then could go into making the boat sail fast rather than wasting my emotions.
Great.
I'm just going to go to another one from Elisa, who says, when or what precise event made you really aware that you were making history? And she's put in brackets, and risking your life. And how did you feel the motivation or strength pulling you through during that time?
It was interesting. When I first set off, I hadn't really thought of the enormity of the task. So I had been a skipper in Che Blythe's Global Challenge and had skippered along with 11 other boats. And I had 17 people on board with me. And my job was to keep them safe and deliver them on this challenge of a lifetime. And literally 3 months after finishing that, I set off on the same boat to do the same trip nonstop on my own. And at that point, I'd never lived on my own. I'd never sailed on my own. And this was kind of a trip into the unknown. And the last thing Sir Che Blythe said to me was, don't cry about it. So, of course, the first thing I did do was burst into tears and thought, what am I going to do? So it was really interesting how that went on. And I knew the route and I knew I had confidence in the boat. But what I didn't know was if I had the ability to do it. So it was a kind of a voyage of discovery, I guess, of myself, which is why I learned all these things come out of me. And then I could manage that. And then my sailing's been much better. But you're trapped in this 72-foot world, oblivious to what's going on in the real world, births, deaths, marriages. You have no idea what's going on. And I had messages of support coming in through the website. And every few days they would get grouped up and sent to me. And I would read and reread these messages that were incredible and so inspirational. And apparently all these people were on this journey with me and living this through me. And I was like, oh, I can't let them down now. And in my positive language, I would say, right, I'm doing this for all of us. And it's really interesting how that is quite a driving force when people are kind of on this journey with you virtually. And then you come back and the Navy were out. They fired a gun when I crossed the finish line and Princess Anne was there when I arrived. And this, I remember having breakfast in the hotel the first night I'd slept on land. And the guy came up with a pile of papers and I said, oh, no, you're okay. And he said, no, you're in all of them. And I was like, really? Wow. And it was incredible. And then slowly that realization of where you catch up with the real world of what's gone on for 6 months while you've been in your little bubble. And how much effect it's had. And then I kind of realized that, wow, I've just done that. And even now I forget because I've been very lucky to have done lots of crazy adventures since. and I get introduced at events or read something and I go, oh yeah, that is quite cool actually, and that's me. So it takes a little bit of a reminder, but it's I pushed the boundaries a little bit and survived the other side, and I'm now delighted that those stories can help people get through difficult things or different, you know, influence people in different ways.
I think I was going to say
that kind of links to another question here, and I think that probably there'll be a lot of people in the world at the moment that are going through some very difficult times. I'm guessing that on your sort of various journeys, there will have been times, Nadine's kind of referred to this as her question, where you are completely exhausted, you're fed up, you might be wet, tired, and you're all alone. How do you get through moments like that?
It is tough. And if it was easy, then everybody would be doing it. So at those moments, and you are wet, cold, tired, miserable, wanting to get off for a break, wishing someone else would come and make a decision and do something for you, or even just give you a hug just to make you feel better. And when you're somebody that thrives off other people, it's quite hard to find that somewhere deep inside you've got to push yourself on. And it is that whole thing of there's a lot of time and investment, not only financially, but in, you know, support and work on the project to get you to that start line. And now it's kind of your turn, your part of the project, to kind of deliver it round. So as a team, they've worked really, really hard to get you there. And they're still there on the periphery if you need them, on a satellite phone or an email, to make sure it happens. That you almost feel like, no, this is my part now and I'll get round, and then we'll celebrate our success when we all finish this kind of at the end. And I think it's that looking for the bigger picture and that realization that the bad stuff never lasts forever. You do get out the other side. And with that experience, the next time you go, you think, oh, it's not as bad as last time.
Yeah.
And I survived. So I think you grow in self-belief and self-confidence, and you find those little triggers that help kind of pick you up and just get you through the next cup of tea, the next bag of sweets.
So I think we're quite lucky. We've got quite a good amount of time here. So I think we'll try and get through as many of these questions as possible. So Flick, do you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to go to another one from Alice. She says, when you're sailing around the world, as you say, you have goal points you can get to, for example, the next ocean, and you focus on those goals to stay motivated. So in a situation like this, where we don't know where the finish line might be, how can we maintain our resilience for an indefinite period of time without feeling like we're going to burn out?
Good question, Alice, because we don't have a next great cape or a next ocean, because we don't know whether it's going to be another week, another month, another 3 months. So that's where I think structure and routine in your day, so that you get through day by day. And in that day, you might set yourself a job in the garden or a job in the house or a job cooking, or together as a family, we're going to do this. And just have those little steps each day, and you just make it one step at a time. Don't think big picture. Just think of the things you can control, which is your day-to-day routine and what you can do tomorrow. So plan each day and make it as positive as you can.
Another question here from Simon. What did you kind of like have like a vision for yourself? I mean, like, did you have a sense of, you know, a why that was driving you? There's a lot of people talk today about having a focus on what's your purpose and knowing what your purpose is. Did you have a sense of what your, you know, your why, your purpose?
I don't believe I did, which is quite an unusual thing to say. But in reality, I was a school teacher for 5 years, and I changed careers and became a sailor and went on to do some pretty cool.
Were you trying to just get away adventures from the children as far as you possibly could?
No, I genuinely loved teaching. I loved it, but it was almost the right job too soon. And I get lots of comments now. I did secondary education. So I get comments now of, oh, miss, you're quite cool, actually. They didn't say that when I was at school. But I think for me, it was about opportunity. And I never had the intention to sail around the world. I didn't even know that was an option. And I think to realize or be presented with an opportunity and make that decision of whether you take it or not was the key thing for me. So now when I go back into schools and I speak to young people, I go, okay, you know, you're doing your exams and the teachers are asking you about your future. You don't need to know what it is. your biggest decision is going to be, when an opportunity comes by, do you grab it with both hands or do you let it go? And they're the things. And I think, you know, we're very transient in our work now. We move from job to job, whereas before, I think it was more traditional that you stayed in a career and had that job and it became a career. I think now we're quite transient, so people are open to change more. And I think, you know, it is about opportunities. I was lucky, I had an amazing opportunity that then opened the door to others. And I have grabbed them.
Yeah.
And another one here from Tom, who says, what was your biggest challenge on the round the world trip? And how would you say that challenge has helped you to overcome challenges in your everyday life?
There's been a few, I have to say, but the one that sticks by me is being stuck up the mast. I am not good with heights. And something we always have to do is go up the mast. The wind instruments are at the top of the mast, which is the height of a two-story building. And at some point you have to go up there because there's inevitably going to be a problem. So I thought I'd picked the right weather window to go. And as it was, I was in the Southern Ocean. I'd been struck by lightning, and therefore the computer board at the top of the mast was fried and I needed to change it. In the Southern Ocean, the winds are quite strong and continuous, and I'd picked what I thought was a really good weather window, but it was relative to what I'd been in. So the boat was still rocking and rolling. I go up the mast and do my best koala impression, and halfway up, I get stuck, so I can't even go up or down. And I'm thinking, crying right now would be a really good option, but obviously isn't going to help much. And it's bizarre because you look down and there's nobody to talk to or to help you out. And there's nobody in control of this boat and you're stuck up the mast like a rag doll. And it took me an hour and a half to get myself down. And that was all about having the confidence to actually unclip and climb down, because you get frozen. And the worst thing was, after I'd had a good cry when I did get down and then remembered to tell everyone at home that I was safe, was I still had the job to do when the weather did improve, because I still hadn't achieved what I set out to do. So I'm still not good with heights. It's still not something I enjoy. But what it did teach me was, yes, your immediate reaction is to just panic or have, you know, sheer fear, but actually that doesn't often help you. And if you're quite practical about things, you know, shut the emotions off and just deal with it. When you do get through it, then you can let the emotions flow and it makes you feel much better, but you'll be surprised at what you can achieve when you're under pressure.
Got a question here from Diane. I think probably at the moment there are a lot of kind of people in leadership positions where people are looking to them for the answers. And I think there's kind of a well-known thing that often when you're in that situation, you can, you know, get that sort of sense of imposter syndrome. And Diane's kind of said to here, how do you deal with imposter syndrome, especially in a male-dominated sailing world? I believe we all feel like this once in a while.
Oh my God, yes. And I put my hands up. I feel like that a lot. And my last round the world was with the Volvo Ocean Race. And I was the skipper of Turn the Tide on Plastic, a young international, fully mixed team racing around the world. And there were six male skippers and myself. And every stopover had a press conference and a skipper's briefing. And I used to stand outside the door of the skipper's briefing, dreading walking in that room every single time. And it was that whole imposter syndrome. And I had to have a little quiet word with myself of, you know, you're responsible for a team, you're a skipper, you have every right to be there. And then you kind of look around the table, and I'd sailed more times around the world than some of them. And some of them have never sailed on their own. So as far as rights to be there or hold that position, you know, I could justify myself. Yet I still had to have that inner dialogue with myself to get myself in that room, take a deep breath, put on a brave face and sit there and kind of feel as if I shouldn't be there. So it still happens to me now. And you just have to take a deep breath and weather it, and you get better at it. And if you stick at it, you know, your peers are actually the most supportive. You know, in fairness to the guys, they probably had no idea that the atmosphere I felt was being created was, you know, quite hard to deal with. They were just chatting as mates and having a bit of banter, and I just felt like an outsider. And they had no idea. And probably if I told them, they'd be heartbroken. I'd like to think so. But it's surprising how easily that does. And a lot of it is in our heads. And we're our own worst enemy sometimes, not supporting each other as females in a male environment. So, you know, I realized that it was up to me to change my thought process and my mentality to deal with it and not make it a big thing. But it was interesting that even as most recent as my last round the world, I was still having those anxieties of being in this world environment that I didn't felt I had the right to step into.
Great. I think we may be kind of like, I think there's a few more questions, but I think there's probably quite a lot of similarities with things that we've covered. I'm just thinking there's one here from Ali where she's asked about, you know, have you had like a long-term routine that you've had to move away from? She's mentioning that she's been doing had the same routine for about 3.5 years, and she finds it very difficult to be able to live without that routine. And so how have you adapted to not being able to do, you know, certain aspects of your own routine?
I've actually really embraced it. I've seen this as an opportunity to change the routine and kind of impart new stuff to my routine. So, you know, I'm rubbish at running and I'm rubbish at yoga because I prefer to lift heavy things in the gym because I'm good at that and I'm not good at the other two. So this is a perfect time for me to be forced to do those things I'm not very good at to get better at them while there's no pressure of anybody watching or anybody seeing. And I've quite enjoyed the challenge. You know, my downward dog is not looking good, but it's looking a lot better at the end of this week than it did at the end of last week.
Yeah.
So it's interesting the way I think it's a mindset. You just need to embrace it as, okay, yes, instead of doing the same thing, let's challenge myself to something new.
I'm going to finish on this question because this sounds like someone who obviously follows what you do closely. So Michael has asked, will you be participating in the 2023 Ocean Global Race?
Well, it's a round the world race and we all know I love round the world races, but I don't know if I'll be in that edition, but it's a long way off and we don't even know what's happening next week. So we shall see.
Brilliant. Well, on that note, I want to thank you, Dee, for joining us. It's been really fantastic just to get all of those insights and tips and advice on what we can be doing. I think for me, I kind of things I've really taken away from it are kind of really embracing the opportunity to focus on areas of your life that maybe you would otherwise neglect. Embrace that kind of opportunity. Maybe because we don't quite know what the future looks like, actually really kind of look at potential scenarios and plan for them in the same way as you plan for scenarios when you go on your around the world adventures. And then as someone who sounds like a bit like you, I kind of like to kind of have things to work towards, set yourself goals. So, you know, like have clear goals because we're maybe not getting the kind of feedback that we maybe do normally. So it's been really great to have you on this first event. As we've said, this will be available on our podcast channel, Without Borders. For anyone who wants to look Dee up, if you're not one of her sort of close fans who's watching her, you know, every move, it's her website is deekafari.co.uk and you'll find lots more information there. And then just to mention that next week, we're going to be doing these events every week for the next few months. Most of them are going to take place on a Friday at 3 o'clock London time. Next week is a bank holiday on a Friday, so we're going to be doing our event on Thursday. And next week's event is going to be with someone who's going to be talking about authentic optimism. So obviously at a time like this, you know, we kind of want to be positive, but obviously there's no point being irrationally positive. So it's about thinking about how can we be authentically optimistic in the current world. And that's going to be with a mental skills coach who works with one of the UK's top, English Premier League's top football teams. So that's going to be really interesting. So that's going to take place next Thursday, the 9th of April at 3 p.m. London time. So thank you so much, Dee. I don't know whether you've got any last minute things you want to say to everyone.
No, I just really enjoyed it. It was fun to chat to you. Thank you for everybody that was listening. And thank you for the questions. It's always nice to be challenged and dig deep into those memories that sometimes it's easier to avoid. So I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. And stay safe, everyone.
Yeah. Take care.
Thank you so much, Dee. And thanks, everybody, for joining. And as Dee says, stay safe. And hopefully we'll see you again on one of these events.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.